Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, that podcast that is focused on the zero emission future that we all hope for. As always, I am joined by one of the lovely members of the team, and it is the lovely, the delightful John Curtis. Good morning, John. Good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are.
Hello. I've shortchanged the guest today because it should have been Sarah. And this was set up a couple of months ago. We had some technical issues.
Oh, I see.
Sarah wasn't available today. So I'm sporting a nice blonde wig for anybody who's listening on Spotify or Apple.
And for those of you watching on YouTube, you know the truth. But we get John every time, don't we, to be joined by some wonderful innovators, pioneers and collaborators. And pioneer has capitals for this time, because we are joined by the wonderful Chris Dimitriou from Islington Borough Council, where I once lived. There we go. Chris, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, John. Thank you for having me. It is an absolute pleasure to be here today.
Well, Chris, the pleasure is ours because, listen, you've been at this decarbonisation business for some blooming time and making an incredible difference. But before we get into all of that, just give us a little snapshot of what your role is today. And how you got into Islington Borough Council.
Okay, thanks, Paul. So I'm, as you know, Chris Dimitriou. I am the Assistant Director of Corporate Fleet Transport and Accessible Community Transport. I might have the longest job title in the public sector. They keep throwing stuff at me to mess up. But yeah, I've been here quite a long time. I've been here for 24 years, Paul. Actually, I was only meant to be here for 2 weeks until I got a proper job. 24 years later or 25 years later, I'm still looking for that proper job. But no, in all honesty, I've worked in the environment directorate here at the council all of them years, and I've been doing different stuff within the environment, whether it's sort of managing contractors, waste contractor is, whether it's then looking after our cleansing and waste teams ourselves thereafter when the services came back in-house. I've been an enforcement officer, I've been a compliance officer, but yeah, I've been doing this gig for about 5 years now, this sort of fleet gig. And actually, I think I've found my passion. I think this is the job for me. So, you know, despite being here for such a long time, I don't feel stale. I feel like I've always been doing something different, but yeah, I think I found my calling. I think e-mobility, for various reasons, is really important to me. And we'll probably get into that in the next 20, 45 minutes, wherever it might be. But yeah, it's really important to me, that transition to electric vehicles. And we've made a really good start here in Islington, 140 vehicles so far, but we've still got a fair way to go to transition all of them. Our fleet is about 561 at today's count. It's growing all the time as the council insources services, which makes our job hit harder because then that's more vehicles to transition. Half of the fleet, great. We can transition them relatively easily because they live in a depot overnight. The other half of the fleet goes home overnight, and home could be everywhere in the southeast and, you know, up and down the country. And that's the more difficult transition. But that's just part of my role. I also manage our fleet and workshops here and all the compliance that, you know, that brings with that, looking after the vehicles, and I manage our community transport team as well. So that's, you know, transporting passengers, send children, adults to day centres, care homes, schools and back home. So yeah, it's a big remit, but I really enjoy it.
Working for the local authority, Chris, is something which is very, very undervalued in society. I think that a lot of people are very quick to criticise you guys and think that you rock up at about 10 o'clock, you finish at 3, you don't do much in between other than drink coffee and have something for lunch. And the reality of what you're doing and the scale and importance of what you do in local authorities is key to society functioning. Do you get a lot of grief from people in your wards?
We do, John. It's a different type of grief. I get less grief now than I did before doing the other roles that I did. But you're absolutely right. We do get a bad name in the public sector. And, you know, this thing about working shorter days, drinking coffee all day, it really isn't the case. Listen, during COVID was probably the first time in a long time where our roles here were appreciated more. You know, we local authority, public sector, whether it's the NHS or whatever it might be, there seemed to be a lot more respect, a lot more, you know, people noticing, you know, the importance of the public sector and what we offer and, you know, the day-to-day services we provide. That's changing a little bit again, unfortunately. But yeah, I think it's hard. It's hard. We get a bad name, but, you know, we try. There's a lot of us that try our very, very best. And I suppose we have to.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcar-ma. Search Europcar Business.
So, Chris, you really getting your teeth into this whole decarbonisation business. What is the range of vehicles that you're dealing with?
Yeah, so we've got, as you would imagine, Paul, we've got a massive different type of municipal fleet. So that ranges from your typical cars and vans, medium-sized vans, large vans. We've got cage tippers. We've got sweeping vehicles, small and large. We've got buses, again, of different sizes. We've got refuse collection vehicles. We've got plant. So you name it, we've got it on the fleet, which makes that transition a little bit harder because actually everyone wants something slightly different. So if we're specking up a vehicle for our grounds maintenance team, they would want a toolbox on the back and different elements. If I'm doing it for my street cleansing service or my recycling service, they'd want a different body as well. So getting that spec right is so, so hard. But we try and do that. I just don't go off and do it on my own. I do it collectively with colleagues of the service. Almost lead them to it, spec it up, see how you get on. And then if we need to tweak it, we would. But specing the workhorse vehicles, I say, is the most difficult. So if I'm completely honest, anything over 3.5 ton in terms of that transition is really awkward and quite difficult.
Yeah.
And we've had
what are the sweet spots, Chris? What are the sweet spots for that transition to the electrification over the 3.5 ton that you've found so far?
Again, it's difficult to answer. Where we're buying more or less sort of standard type vans, 4.25 ton vans, it's okay. We're finding that they are the most reliable vehicles. When there's not too much to do on these vehicles, it's probably where we're happiest. But, you know, it's so difficult because, like I said, every department or service has a different little niche in terms of what they collect, what they dispose of, how they carry stuff. And that's the awkwardness. It is hard. It is hard because, you know, we talk about turnkey solutions in this industry a lot. And when we talk about turnkey here internally, it is the whole journey from procurement, from specking up the vehicles, then procurement. It's maintaining these vehicles. It's learning about these vehicles. It's installing chargers. It's a massive piece of work where 3 or 4 years ago, we would have a driver come to the counter and say, my electric vehicle's not working. And we'd be like, oh, what do we do? The first port of call would be, you know, contact the OEM, the supplier of the vehicle, and say, the vehicle won't charge or whatever it might be. Actually, it wasn't the vehicle's problem. It was a network issue in our basement with one of the DC chargers. It was an RFID card not working. So we've got a lot better over the years at deciphering what problems are, but we're still not completely there because there's always issues and there's so much to manage, there's so much to understand. Yeah, that's a difficulty. So yeah, I've probably not answered your sweet spot question very well, Paul, but the truth.
Oh, I was going to say, Chris, because I know that you've got a few refuse collection vehicles and I've seen them. So I know that that is one area where you're having some success. Maybe sweet spot wasn't the right phrase. Maybe where are you having some success in switching over?
Yeah. So The successes come slightly later because we're getting, especially the bigger vehicles, we're getting first gen, maybe second gen vehicles. So we are a little bit the guinea pigs for a lot of these vehicles. So, you know, if we were the first local authority, one of the first to have the Dennis e-collect refuse collection vehicles 4 or 5 years ago, and we had a lot of issues with them for the first 12 months, but it's working with, you know, the OEM. It's, again, deciphering the problems and actually getting them right. So now I'm confident when I have these conversations, when I have conversations with our local authorities or when I'm doing some of the shows, I'm like, yes, you're ready. You can buy these vehicles now because we've been through the pain. So I'm not going to lie and say there's been no pain, because there has been. There's been a lot of pain with, you know, with the first gen, second gen. If we had a fleet of, you know, 500 cars and vans, we'd be absolutely fantastic. It'd be great, you know, tried and tested. It's the bigger stuff that's a little bit of the headache. But yeah, we're getting through it, and we're getting through that pain. And, you know, and I'm completely transparent. When I talk to colleagues, I'm like, maybe don't look at that yet. Maybe this is the problem you might face. And we're trying to, you know, we're trying to heal and resolve them problems before others get, you know, get to the point where we're spending a large amount of money on these vehicles. But again, it's the vehicles, you know, if we're talking about EHGVs, refuse collection vehicles, our big buses, these are the vehicles that have the most impact. If we're reducing emissions like we want to do, if we're improving residents, you know, air quality, it's the big vehicles that make the most difference. So we're not going to stop. We're going to keep transitioning the bigger fleet, despite some of the problems. But we'll get it right, and we'll get it right for the others as well. So, you know, when they're ready to move on, let's go and speak to Chris. He's got it right. Crack on.
Getting it right really matters, and you are one of the people, Chris, who's got a wealth of experience in this area. Do you spend a lot of your time helping other authorities and other fleet managers to learn from those mistakes that you spoke about?
Absolutely, John. So, yeah, I've had nearly every local authority up and down the country come and visit us here at our site. We have conversations about, you know, our charging infrastructure, our vehicles. But yeah, that's why I do a lot of the shows. John, I do a lot of the circuit shows. I'll talk about, you know, our decarb journey, what's gone right, what's gone wrong. It's disappointing for me that other local authorities in particular are not moving as fast as we are. So we are literally, you know, if there's something new, we are the guinea pig for it. Again, which I'm happy to be, but it'd be good if others were just took some of the strain and could help, and, you know, we could learn from them. But at the moment, now, 4 or 5 years later, it still seems to be Islington or Nottingham or a few other local authorities who are doing that stuff.
What do you put that down to, Chris? Is it a people thing? Is it you drive that activity? There's in each of the authorities in Nottingham, we can name the individual almost who's made that happen. Is it a people problem rather than a technology problem?
I say this all the time, John, actually. Whose responsibility is it to transition a existing fleet to an electrical electric fleet? Is it the fleet manager? Is it an energy team? Is it a carbon team? Is it someone in the facilities team? And that is the problem. There's no one really getting the ball by the horns and taking the lead. We're quite lucky here in Islington because, one, we've got the political support, and we know moving to, you know, EVs is the right thing to do. So that's great. And they've given us a big pot of money in terms of sort of our capital projects infrastructure to make that happen. So great. That's the first thing. And then, you know, my job is to try and make that happen. I don't think it's the same at other local authorities. I think there's issues in regards to who is responsible for doing it. Because you've got maybe in some areas, maybe aging fleet managers and like, maybe this is not for me. Maybe I'll leave it for someone else. But, you know, beyond that, the whole infrastructure piece is a massive piece of work. So that's difficulty. Again, if we go up and down the country, there's also politics involved now, even more so than before. There's cost of living crisis. So there's so many factors that are stopping maybe local authorities from moving as quick as we are. And that's a problem. And it's a problem for me in terms of resilience. So I'd love my neighbouring authorities here to move as quickly as we are, especially with the bigger stuff, because God forbid, if something happens to our main depot where I'm sitting here today, how am I going to get a 26-ton refuse, you know, e-refuse collection vehicle charged? I can't. I'm not going to do it on an on-street charger. And that's a problem, that we haven't got much of resilience, and I need that. And that's why I need other public local authorities in particular to try and get the ball rolling, let's say. But yeah, it's difficult. It's a really difficult one, John. But yeah, that responsibility piece is also a big factor as well. You know, we're lucky here with, there's me, there's a couple of others, and we're all passionate about doing this. So, you know, we work holistically with our facilities teams, you know, with everyone involved in making this happen. We've all got the same commitment, but yeah, I sense that commitment is not quite the same at some local authorities, which is disappointing.
Yeah, and it's reflected, and you've reflected on the politics bit. There's a couple of things that spring to mind, and of course, you know, some of us maybe will be familiar with the attitude of Kent changing dramatically as a result of a political change there, and reform have a wholly different attitude towards net zero, towards electric vehicles, and we've seen the political will change. But I think you hit on a really important element, because I think it's the people within the businesses and the operations. Westminster City Council obviously have gone down a road of an entirely electric bin lorry fleet. Lambman Way, a big charging depot with lots and lots of power. And they are doing project sharing with other councils to work together. It does feel that there is little pockets of will. But how are we going to make that difference? I mean, you're doing your bit, stepping up at the shows and doing that sort of thing. Is there anything else that we can do to get the right people in the right place? Because it does feel like a people thing.
Yeah, I think we're doing a little bit more than we did. I think there has been a bit of grant funding as well to try and get, you know, specialist people trained up in the, you know, the whole e-mobility piece. So that helps, but I think a lot of it, Paul, is that political direction really, and having the finances to do it. But it's difficult for me to say that. Look, here we're 6 square miles as a borough. We know electrification absolutely is perfect for us, especially for the vehicles that live here overnight. So everything works in our favour in terms of transitioning that fleet. If you're a big rural authority and you're doing, you know, and their bin crews in particular are doing 100 miles a day and collecting 1,000 bins, it might not work. It might not work. So I can only base it on what I'm doing here. And I know it absolutely works here. And I think it will work for other, you know, city authorities, others in London. So that's why I keep doing the shows. That's why I'm coming on here today. I want to keep plugging what we're doing. We're getting it right, so others don't have to get it wrong. And we know that. And there's a lot of colleagues who do want to move on it. And actually, they say to me, "Yeah, we're not getting that political support. We're not getting, you know, the finances coming through." So it's such a challenge. But we're going to get to a point when there's no option. There's going to be no option. So actually, if you don't start now, you're going to be left behind, and they're going to be in big, big trouble, these local authorities who haven't started. So again, we were fortunate. We started this journey, well, you know, with the bigger stuff 6-7 years ago, but actually we've had electric vehicles on the fleet for 20 odd years. But, you know, 6-7 years ago, we built a new high voltage substation. We got funding from the GLA through the Grid Growth Fund bid. It was over £1 million, and that paid for our high voltage substation. And a few DC charges. That funding ain't really available there. So that makes it even more difficult, because that money isn't there to really help local authorities at the moment, even more so now with the cost of living crisis and everything else we're facing. So in a way, it's going to be harder to make that transition for local authorities, but at the same time, they're running out of time, Paul. They're running out of time. So yeah, they've got to get a move on.
It's fascinating to see you work, Chris, because when I worked as a civil servant, we were told that having our own opinions and having our own thoughts and beliefs articulated as you do is a challenge, and you shouldn't be doing that. And actually what you do is you communicate very clearly what it is you as an authority stand for, and you're really good at just calling a spade a spade. You don't mince words. You speak in plain language. Is that easy for your bosses to live with, do you think?
At the moment, I think it is, John. I think at the moment it is. It might change. It might change. The politics might change. And we've got local elections in May next year, so things might change. I'm passionate. I'm really passionate about this. And everyone who knows me knows I'm passionate about this. Look, when I was a kid, I spent a lot of time in hospital with asthma, and you know, I was literally in a hospital bed every sort of few months with respiratory issues.
Wow.
Okay. My small child at the moment, hopefully not for lung suit, but he's been in hospital, you know, on a couple of occasions. I lost my father a few years ago to lung disease. He never smoked. He never smoked, John. So for me, air quality, climate change, it's not a hoax. It's real. Just because you can't see the problem, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So yeah, I think everyone here understands my passion for it, the passion for this. And I think they've probably got the right person for the job in terms of doing what we're doing here. I hope so anyway. But yeah, they let me express myself because they know I'm not selling a dream. This is not a vanity trip about trying to electrify vehicles because we want to. It is the right thing to do. And our colleagues and other local authorities know it's the right thing to do. But yeah, that support is just, it's just not equal. And there's various reasons why it's not, you know, why it's not equal.
It explains to me, Chris, the man that we see before us. And because I was kind of like, why has this guy spent 24 years in environmental stuff when, you know, and just kind of fell into it, went into the, you know, but has stayed focused on environmental stuff. So how much of an impact on the way that you feel and think was your early years? And talk to me about, you know, what you see across industry, but particularly with air quality, and how you think you can make a difference.
Yeah, to be honest, I did sort of fall into a local authority pool because I don't think anyone grows up and goes to university and think I want to work for a local authority. So, like I said, it was meant to be a 2-week gig 24 years ago, and then it became a 24-year gig. But now I was never probably smart enough to be a doctor or a physio or all the things my mum and dad wanted me to be at the time. But it feels I can give you something back. It feels I'm making a difference. And it feels, and I don't just feel like that. My team does as well. So we feel we're making a difference. If we can improve, you know, air quality in where we live, you know, where we work, then that's really important to us. We are seeing CO2 emissions come down across London. And again, I can't say that, you know, the credit goes to us here, but we're making an impact on that. Congestion charging, ULEZ charging all helps as well. But yeah, I think there's a lot more to do. I've heard, I was at an event recently where TfL were there, and actually NOx emissions actually increasing. So that's another bit of an issue, which maybe we don't really address too well because we don't really have that data available. So if we're talking about CO2, we can actually, you know, say we've saved this amount of, you know, tons of CO2 by not using as much diesel or petrol, whatever it might be. But in terms of PM2 and NOx, it's a lot more difficult to try and calculate. So, yeah, we need to do better on all aspects of reducing sort of pollution. But we need the measurement and the tools to try and work it out. So, yeah, still a bit to go. But, you know, we know we've our CO2 emissions has dropped in the borough, not just because of, you know, transport fleet related stuff, but all the other stuff we're doing to decarbonize buildings, homes across the council as well. So, yeah. Decarbonisation, climate is a huge agenda for all of us in the borough, whatever department or directorate you're in. So, yeah, it helps. And it helps, you know, it helps me think that I'm making a difference as well because, you know, we're all in sync and trying to make that change.
Yeah. Chris, you take this very seriously, the whole kind of decarbonisation piece, because I'd like you just, and I guess it's the importance of air quality in the city, because Chris, how do you get to work each day?
So mostly. I know Sam Clark doesn't believe me, but I hope you guys will. So I run to work every day. So it's just,
and
under
so
11
you,
miles.
You live just around the corner then?
I live 11 miles away. Oh, I live in the most northern point of Enfield. I live in Crews Hill. So yeah, I run just under 11 miles each day, and then get the train home. So yeah, that's my Monday to Friday. And I do work from the office each day. If I'm honest, why I do it, you know, I do it because it's the only time I'm alone, Paul. So it's 90 minutes of sort of solitary peace and quiet. I come to work, there's people screaming and shouting, I go home. My wife's usually moaning to me about
screaming and shouting at you. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like 90 minutes of peace and quiet. I started running all them years ago just to lose a bit of weight. And I thought, oh, this is good. Kept going. I've run a few marathons. I've run a few ultras, but actually I run for different reasons now. I think mental health is really important. And actually, if I don't run, I get a bit jittery. I get a bit, you know, so yeah, I don't mind getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning in, you know, when it's raining, when it's cold, and it's windy, and doing that run to work, because actually, whatever the weather, I feel great for it after. So,
But that's fantastic. But it gives you a good reason to want good air quality, right? Because you're running through how many boroughs? Probably a good four or five coming down, aren't you?
Three boroughs, and that's a good point. I'll measure the air quality route on my way to work.
No, that's not good. Well, that's better.
I have a load of Haringey or Enfield.
Should definitely knock on your door. I would run through your council. You need to sort it all out. But that's amazing, and it does kind of give us a picture of that commitment, and I love the mental health element too, because it is tremendously important, isn't it? You know, to have physical health as well as mental health.
I mean, I was just gonna say
because one of the things that you've done in Islington is lead the way. And you're leading the way in particular at the moment with the charging infrastructure. Just talk to us about the sort of stuff that you're doing really to make a difference there.
Yeah, okay. I think for me, Paul, again, I probably haven't mentioned it earlier, but I've definitely mentioned it at some of the shows and events. But we are really keen of making that whole vehicle to grid piece really work for us. So, yeah, we've got probably 180 sockets across the council in terms of chargers, AC, DC, different speeds. But whether it's still the case now, we were the first in the UK to have a megawatt charger. Don't get me wrong, we capped it at 300 kilowatts because we've got nothing to charge over 150 kilowatts anyway. But it's a megawatt bi-directional charger. And we've got a couple of vehicle-to-grid trials going on at the moment. We've got two vehicles that were vehicle to load enabled, now they're vehicle to grid. So let's just say they're V2X capable. So we're discharging energy from them as part of this trial. And we've also got a separate AC V2G trial. So yeah, for me, it's really seeing how we can get the most impact out of these big expensive vehicles. You know, they're costing £300,000-£400,000. Yes, like I said earlier, it's really important that they do their fundamental job of collecting waste, let's say, if we're talking about refuse collections, but actually, how else can we use these vehicles? There are, you know, with their energy on wheels. So, you know, you've seen before, but we've powered events with these refuse collection vehicles, not used a lot of energy. That energy is the commodity. And that's why I'm trying to get into colleagues here, you know, our energy to understand, you know, these big vehicles are going to help that energy transition. I want this to be a microgrid here. Can we generate enough energy to trade back to the grid? So yeah, yes, we know electric vehicles, especially the bigger stuff, is expensive. Yes, we know the infrastructure is expensive, but actually, if we see energy as a commodity, how can you use that commodity? So one, yes, vehicle to grid, hopefully there'll be a thing in the future. And our trial is really, really good at the moment, because we know that technology is working, but it needs to become a thing to get, you know, regulations over the line and make that happen in the future. But is there any, you know, what else can you do with the infrastructure? You know, we speak about infrastructure sharing as well. That's something we're doing with the Met Police locally, and we're having conversations with TfL about letting other organizations come here as well. So again, you know, it's expensive, but actually, once you've got that energy and them chargers in place, how can you use it? So yeah, there's different elements there, Paul, but for me, it's that energy piece that we seem to forget as fleet managers. How can you use that energy, especially when you've got big fleets like we have sitting in the depot for longer periods and actually, you know, these vehicles aren't working. So yeah, that's the thing I'm trying to pitch at the moment. See it not just, you know, vehicles and chargers, see it as what it is. It's the energy. And that's the important and that's the expensive part of getting, you know, your connections done. Once you've done it, use that energy and use it in different ways.
You are you're quite a machine, Chris. You know, your personal stuff and running to lose a bit of weight and then sticking at it, just doing the hard yards for years. The job started in a particular place, stuck at it, worked hard, delivered results. What is it that drives you to be that person that's never able to say, job done? You just keep pushing. There's a drive in you that is rare. Where's it come from?
I don't know. It probably comes from my dad, John, actually. So my dad was quite unassuming. He wasn't sort of guy that would say he loves us often or gives us a hug, but he was a serious man. And you don't always understand that when you're young. But when you get older, you realize, oh, yeah, I understand now. I understand why he was quite serious and he was quite stubborn and he was quite perseverant. And that's what I am. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a little bit, I'm a bit of a half glass, half empty man as well, John. So nothing's quite good enough. And I just want to, I want me to be better. I want every day to be better than the last day. I want my team to be the same as well. And if you've got a good team, and a good squad of, you know, individuals all on the same page, really, that drives me as well. You know, it's rewarding. It's what we're doing here is rewarding. And it's not just, you know, the e-mobility bit that's rewarding. It's the other stuff that we do as well. We're making a difference. But I don't know. I don't really know, John. I just think it's a little bit who I am. I think I've always been like this. I've always been driven. I always want to do better for myself, for the people we serve, for the team. So it's just been, I think I get that from my old man, I reckon. So
you spoke about your mental health and you running, and that helps your mental health. Do you have self-doubt? I mean, you seem very assured. Do you ever sit there and think, oh, not sure I've got this?
Yeah, always, John. I always have doubts, really. And I have doubts about everything we do. But again, one thing I'm not scared to do is to fail, because actually, and I said it to one of my apprentices earlier this week, who didn't quite, his test results didn't quite go to plan, and he was really upset. And I said to him, and I say to my own kids, you will fail more than you succeed in life. I feel that I can fail in this role at times, because, you know, to quote Sam Clark as well, that learning by doing is really important. So we can't do stuff here without, you know, making a few hiccups. And so it's the learning. And as long as we are allowed to fail, we can then succeed. And I think I've got that trust from, you know, my senior management team. I've got trust from colleagues. And, we are going to get things wrong. But the important thing is when we get it wrong, we try and make it right or learn from it and move on. And we've had that, and we're going to get that all the time. And, you know, we had the difficult news a few weeks ago of Compleo UK, you know, going, are not going to be with us in the UK for much longer. And, you know, for all the will in the world, we've done everything we needed to here. We've done all the governance that we needed to behind the scenes. We've done due diligence in terms of finances. They were ranked number one in the framework that we were using. And, you know, that happened. So, you know, that's not my fault or our team's fault, but that is the sort of stuff that happens. And that's the sort of stuff we've got explained to sort of senior directors and our chief exec. You know, this has happened, and it's not our fault, but, you know, these things do happen. We're going to get more and more of that in this industry, I think. So that's sort of the gamble. That's sort of the risk that we've got. And that's the risk I'm going to have to put up with and suffer, really. Because, again, some of the stuff we're doing in terms of that vehicle to grid stuff as well, we're relying on, let's say, your SMEs to do that stuff. I can't go to a big OEM and say, right, can you make me a V2G enabled refuse collection vehicle? They'll laugh me off, which they have done. Now, hopefully that might change in the future. So we're relying on SMEs to do the innovation we want, and just really hope that they're still here in 4, 5, 10, 15, 20 years time to see it through. So that's the gamble, because it's, you know, it's a big gamble. We're dealing with, you know, taxpayers' money ultimately. So we want to make the right decision, but also at the same time, future-proof what we're doing now and make sure, you know, we're innovative and we've got the solutions for the future. So really difficult, John. But yeah, it's not being able, it's being able to fail and moving on, getting up and cracking on. And, you know, we've done that. We've had failures and we'll have them again, but we'll learn from them. We'll move on and we'll keep trying to make the right decision. But again, because us not, you know, having
having some of the issues we've had, again, that means other local authorities won't have as many issues.
True.
Because
yeah,
we're making it for them to some extent.
Yeah.
You know, Chris, it's so encouraging to hear you kind of speak about that attitude, but you touched on that kind of dealing with taxpayers' money, but what you're trying to do, particularly with the vehicle-to-grid stuff, is to really mitigate the all-around cost, because you know that energy is a commodity. Energy has been put into our hands in many respects with the vehicles that we've got. I know from other refuse collection vehicle stats that they're probably coming back each day with 70% charge, or you know, possibly even more in some cases. You know, this energy can be traded once it's in the batteries, because you're 300 kilowatt hours of battery and all of that good stuff. It's what you're doing is laudable. I'm interested also in that resilience that you've built up as a human being. I mean, and running will be a part of that resilience, because you'll have run through niggles, you'll have run through difficulties, you'll have got up and not felt like it and just kind of pushed through. But are there other learning experiences through your life, maybe outside of work, that have really taught you the resilience that you is clearly on display here and that attitude to failure?
Nothing. For me, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but running has really changed my output on life and how I see things. And if you can run a marathon, if you can run an ultra, you can do absolutely anything, I feel. So there's nothing harder than testing yourself, testing your body. And once you know you can push through, I could push through stuff here. I can deal with, you know, mini dramas, major dramas at work, because I've put my body through the stress and of, you know, running these long distances. So I don't know, things become easier when you test yourself mentally and physically. Or maybe I'm just getting a bit older I know a little bit more than I did 20 years ago. Maybe it's a bit of that, but yeah, stupidly at New Year's Eve last year, Paul, I was at a party and we're all going around the table and saying, right, New Year's resolutions, what are you going to do? I'm going to give up smoking, someone said. I'm going to lose weight. And they came to me like, what are you going to do? And I'm like, oh God, what am I going to do? I don't smoke, I don't drink really, very occasionally. I said, oh, I'm going to run 2,025 miles this year. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty good. So I thought everyone forgot about it. And then 3 weeks later, I get a text. Oh, how's your 2025 challenge going? And I'm like, oh, damn, they remembered. So yeah, pretty good. I'm about 150 miles in now. So yeah, I'm about to try and keep that up. I've still got about 450 miles to go before I get to that. Get to that number, but I've also signed up for the Larnaca Marathon in Cyprus in November. So yeah, a couple of challenges, but yeah, for me, that resilience is being built up from running as well. So I'm a run leader for the council as well. So trying to get other people fit and into running as well equally as important as well. So yeah, I'm going to put resilience down to running, but again, it's sort of part of my upbringing as well. You know, yeah, it's who I am, I think, Paul, I think.
But hey, how lovely is that? It's so lovely. My son's going through some resilience testing of his own at the moment, and it's I won't go into too much detail, but suffice to say that he's probably going to do about 40, 50 miles over the next few days with a lot of weight on and a lot of stress and a lot of challenges. But it is that through the physical comes a mental fortitude that gives you not that sense of indestructibility, but almost like that knowing that you'll hit a wall and then get through it, and then hit another wall and then get through it. And somebody said the phrase, we go through walls or something, and we're the ones that get a bit bloody so that other people can come through. And that's kind of what you're doing. I love the mindset, and we've always really enjoyed your company and loved having you around and hearing from you. Now I'm really getting to the grips of why you are the man you are.
The questions you and John are asking, I wasn't really prepared for, to be honest, Paul. So you know, I've never really looked at myself and thought, am I resilient? Am I, why do I do this? Why do I behave in the way I do? Which I should do, because, you know, I've had some executive coaching and stuff like that and stuff, but I just, you know, I hardly ever think about who I am and why I am. Just doing it, really. And maybe, again, being here for a long time in the council as well, maybe I know how things operate. I know how things tick. I know, you know, how to communicate effectively with teams or politicians or whatever. So maybe it just all helps and works. Maybe if I was in a different organisation tomorrow, I wouldn't be as assured as I am now about everything I do and we do. So, yeah, there's a little bit of that, I think, as well, Paul.
What are you aiming to achieve over the next 12 months, Chris? Is there a big nugget that you're going after and saying, I'm going to get that delivered?
I think the V2G stuff, John, that is really absolutely my priority. So we've had this trial for about 3 or 4 months. And actually, Paul, it's actually down to you, actually, to some extent. So I met the partners we were working with, Kasai and Zev Hub. Probably 2 years ago, and that's where it all started. And then Kasai got some innovative funding, and that's who we're partnering with this trial. So, yeah, it's been really, really great in terms of making sure or understanding how the technology works. What the problem we do have in terms of that V2G element is our capacity to export isn't very high. So we have got a capacity based on having solar PVs on the roof here. So if you've got solar PVs, you will have a natural export limit in case, you know, you're drawing in enough energy, but we need a lot more of it. So that's the next sort of portal call is actually, how do we, they call it the G99 process. So we need to go through that process and have the ability to export more. But then, like I said, there's tons of regulations. We need to sort of cross the line and double check to see how that works. There's still not enough bidirectional chargers out there. There's still a problem with having the ability to charge and discharge remotely. So where you can charge and stop charging a vehicle quite easily with a lot of CPMS systems, that ability to charge and discharge isn't there. And we've tried different sort of suppliers, but Kasai think they can do that. And it's just gone live, or they think they can do that over the last couple of days. So let's see, because what we've been doing is literally going physically to the vehicle, charging the vehicle, discharging the vehicle, stopping the discharge and charging. We want to do that a little bit more intelligently. So we're trying to set up everything. We're trying to get everything in place that we can do in terms of making sure our vehicles are V2G enabled. We've got the bi-directional kit there, and the rest we're going to have to wait and see what happens and before we can do it. But for me, that is our ultimate utopia. This building being a microgrid, potentially having enough energy to trade back to the grid as well, creating our own energy resilience. And that's going to bring costs down. That's going to reduce our massive energy bill that we've got in this building, because it's a waste transfer station as well. It really excites me. The V2G thing is really, really important for me. So 12 months, not sure, John, that would be the utopia, but probably 12 might look like 24 months. What we're trying to achieve from e-mobility, we've upcycled vehicles as well. And when we do that, when we upcycle our big refuse collection vehicles, we save around £100,000. So I'm looking to upcycle more of them and our buses as well. And that's twofold, really. One, because drivers are more familiar with the cabs anyway and the process and the size of the vehicles. But actually, if I want them V2G enabled, I have to do that repowering exercise or that upcycling exercise rather than buying brand new for an OEM who hasn't got V2G enabled vehicles.
Wowzers. It's a big 12 months ahead, a big 24 months ahead. You're taking this stuff really, really seriously with the megawatt charger, you know, just giving people an opportunity to kind of deploy that kit, to think about the V2G stuff. Interestingly, Chris, you will, and this will be useless to everybody listening, unfortunately, because this will be released, it'll be after the event, but there is V2G AC charging going to be on display at Fleet Mobility Live at the EV Cafe Village. So you'll be able to see some options from other people. But you're right, a lot of the people are having to innovate, and the big OEMs are not doing it, are they? In the same way that we would hope for. But Chris, because we know that you have got a day job to do and you've got a lot of work to do, stack it up by the sounds of it. I mean, goodness knows you spend every minute doing stuff. But we have a closing tradition on the EV Cafe podcast. And, you know,
I'm getting worried now.
Well, yes, but it's a nice one. It's a nice one. So you are now to be presented with the EV Cafe magic wand, fresh from Harry Potter. We stole it off him and adjusted it accordingly. And now this is coming to you. So get yourself ready. Here it comes. Oh, wow. He's got it. There. I'm loving the NFL approach to that. But Chris, you now have one wish, and you can deploy it as you wish. How do you want to use your one wish?
If I had one wish from a professional perspective, it is that other London local authorities follow suit and try and get their decarbonisation of their own fleet's journey going, which will be great for London's air quality. It will help us all, but actually, selfishly as well, it also give us a bit of resilience as well in case something happens here and we do need to charge, you know, some of the bigger vehicles. So yeah, that infrastructure sharing piece, really, really important. We're not doing enough of it for the commercial fleets, commercial vans, bigger vehicles in London. And I think we can do a lot better there, and we can only do better by local authorities really leading the way. I think we've got a big responsibility. I think we should be leading the way in the public sector. Disappointing that some haven't, you know, made as much impact as others yet. But yeah, that one wish is, come on everyone else in London, let's get cracking, let's do this.
Sounds great. I'm curious, because you highlighted that as a professional wish, and rightly so. I'm curious, if you had a one wish outside of work, we don't normally give people that little choice. I know, it's sort of true. Unfortunately, Chris, it's unlikely to come to pass, unlike your first wish, of course, which, you know, is the official wish. What would it be outside of work? What would your wish
outside
be?
Outside of work, I'm not going to mention running again, because I've sort of covered that, and I think I've got that covered. But even though I work in Islington, I don't support Arsenal. I support the other team down the St. Vincent's Road, to Tottenham. So them winning the Premier League would be that wish.
Okay, wow. Right. It's not going to happen.
Would be.
Yeah.
No chance.
Just alienated yourself from your whole borough, but there we go.
Yeah, maybe I didn't know that. Maybe this will be my last day working, isn't it? Yeah. Sure.
That's the V2G trial gone to pot.
Can we edit that? No, but yeah, I've been a big Spurs supporter. I've had a season ticket I did have for many, many years. A lot of pain. So we didn't win a cup last year, but to win the Premier League or the Champions League would be the dream come true. But yeah,
well, colleagues, there we go.
Who I work with wouldn't be happy with that.
John, I'm telling you now, Chris is an absolute force of nature, isn't he?
Yeah, I've known Chris for very many years, but I've never had the opportunity to spend so long listening to his experience and all the things that make him who he is. And I love this podcast, because it gives us that opportunity to just peel back those layers and start to really see who delivers for us. And Chris, you deliver every time. Thank you, my friend.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. Oh, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to seeing it go live, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, we'll get the pleasure, as will many people get the pleasure of hearing you next week at Fleet and Mobility Live, where you're speaking, sharing this knowledge, obviously sharing in a similar way. And I know there's some big topics that we perhaps haven't covered today, like the Levi Fund and other bits and pieces like that we perhaps should think about for another day. But in fact, is Chris? I don't know if a webinar in the future. You'll be back on a webinar. Yeah. I can't remember.
I've done a couple of you guys, happy to do it again. If I said, Paul, if you're ever passing through, John, if you're over in London, is welcome here. Come and see the depot.
We need to come.
Do something. Yeah, we're cool. We should. Shelter,
John, we need to do this. This is something John and I have talked about creating content, about great people doing great things in our industry, and we need to get down there and see Chris.
Can I give you guys some credit as well before we probably finish?
Yes. Just
you guys give everyone. Yeah. Listen, you guys give everyone the opportunity, whether it's, a local authority, fleet manager, whether it's whoever it might be, the fact that you're talking to everyone, the fact that you want to listen and hear from everyone, different sectors of, everything with it is amazing. And I think you guys do a tremendous job. Thank you from me to you guys. I do log into, Friday's EV Caf pretty much every week as well. So it helps you. It helps me that you guys do the news, so I don't have to listen to all the news. So you can just read it to me. But honestly, everything, you guys are superheroes and legends in what you do. I really mean that. You get a lot of respect, and I think you really do help. The only thing I'll say is, once we all move to EVs, what would you do next? What's next?
Oh.
What would you do?
Well, retirement.
Yeah. It might take that long, actually. So let's see. But nah.
Well, it's sort of 2035. I'd like to be hanging up the magic wand by 2035. John, what about you?
Oh, I shall be running a small holding and growing my own food and creating renewables and battery storage and all that stuff without question. So, and Chris, you'll be very welcome to come and eat at my table, my friend.
Right. There's plans. Fantastic. Thanks, guys. Thank that. You for all you do.
Oh, bless you, man. Listen, thank you. And wow, love it so much. So much insight, so much innovation, and just leading the way, smashing through walls on our behalf. And listen, we are grateful. I hope the wish comes true. I know there's a lot of good councils. I mean, we've heard a little bit about Westminster. I know that there are other people doing stuff in London, but certainly nowhere near the hope that we would have. And there's some great examples of real encouraging stuff, but wouldn't it be great for your wish to become true, not only in London but all across the UK? But Chris, thank you for your time. And listen, everybody, connect with Chris on LinkedIn. He's there, Chris Dimitru. You'll be able to connect in the comments. Head over to the website to hear a plethora of other podcasts, lots and lots of different people, some public sector, many in industry, some fleet, some vehicles, all kinds of different things. As Chris said, we do try and get everybody in the ecosystem. And if you need a new vehicle, by the way, you can also even find a really good value vehicle from leasing.com directly through our website. And you'll get the best value vans or cars right from there. So check that out as well. We've got no more time. So without further ado, we just want to say thank you again, Chris. And to everybody out there, thanks for listening and have a great day.